Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Hilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott.
And Benoit Turner.
Good afternoon.
Hello. Now, in honor of Avengers Beta being open this weekend and a lot of people diving into what is increasingly a pretty divisive game, we just sort of gathered to put our heads together and started talking about various outdated tropes and different things that have sort of got in the way of other games potentially being better than they were. So we've just got a little pool of complaints and moans that we're going to get to. One of the first things that Benroy mentioned is the idea of various copied and pasted open worlds, games that just go open world for the sake of it. And I know that you hung this on Ghost of Tsushima. Is that the thing that you want to lead with?
It's weird because it's not like that's not the it's the most recent one, because it's like I've just done it, so I guess so. But it's not like I'm going, oh, this is the crappiest thing in the world. It's just I've kind of seen this enough times now, and you probably didn't need all these gimmicks in it, sort of thing.
Well, it defines some gimmicks, because I think there's plenty, like especially Ubisoft games, that have just collectathons for the sake of it, or just stuff where you're out and about in the open world for far longer than you need to be.
They've done the collecting stuff well, I guess, that you can grab it off the horse and stuff, things like that. But why am I collecting flowers just to get a different coloured armor or a different colour? Anything?
Well, when, that's why,
isn't it? I mean, it gets covered. Like, it gets covered in blood after 5 minutes, or it gets covered in dirt, and it's almost a needless layer to the game that could just be stripped out straight away and affects nothing to the gameplay whatsoever, apart from that one trophy where you got to get the black and white dye people. It's just let's switch the color and just move on, really. And maybe make an effort and not call supplies and give it an actual name rather than just...
What do you call them? Cog tags? Why can't they be called supplies?
Because cog tags are unique to each gear and actually have a little description on them as someone has died, Scott. Whereas someone's
died. Video game throw up.
I don't know what this supplies thing is. Josh, what's your general reply to the way that Mr. Benroy is acting up on a Friday afternoon?
Well, like it often is doing these podcasts with you and Benroy, I often agree with the broad strokes point, but the examples use are not the examples that I would use for them, you know what I mean? Because when it comes to the flowers and Ghosts of Tsushima, I had a good time picking all those bad lads up, because believe it or not, swapping out my colours, like that was the thing I was here for. When I got a new set of armour, I wanted to haul ass to the black dye guy to make it look all Batman-esque, you know what I mean? So I have no problem with that. All them being called supplies, Benroy. What else are you gonna call them? What name would satisfy you other than supplies?
Let me rename it to everyone. I would say boring, pointless currency.
But it's not pointless, is it? Because you unlock stuff.
I mean, no, it's probably the most pointful currency in the whole game. It's probably the most meaningful thing, and has the worst name. Whereas, like, why can't I give some person flowers to make my bow better instead of supplies and maybe a bit of iron?
Because, old school Japan didn't trade in flowers.
Did they trade in just generic supplies and not like fish?
Fish could be a supply. I don't know. I don't know why that's a thing. And either way, to get it back around to the general, like the problem that I would say is more to do with how much Ubisoft bloat there is in open world stuff. The idea of just go collect 50,000 feathers, or, you know, in GTA 4 was my breaking point, go get all the pigeons. And I was like, I'm just never going to do that stuff. I did think that in Tsushima's case, at least they tie it to something like unlocking a costume, or like you said, the supplies that you can put into different blades, like powering them up. But I mean, Josh, what would a different example be for you? Is it the Ubisoft side of things?
The Ubisoft side of things and like the Avengers, you know what I mean? I had no interest, even though it's not an open world game, you have like these open areas where you're encouraged to go kick open chests and gather some loot and gather some collectibles and stuff. And it just is ultimately, well, in my eyes, kind of like meaningless. Because at least in Ghost of Tsushima, I agree with Ben Roy. I know what you're trying to say. Like, I agree that the things you're collecting aren't exactly exciting. There's no real kind of challenge to it. You're literally just going around a world and picking stuff up. But for me, it was worth it because I was invested in the upgrades. I was invested in, you know, making my katana more effective. I was interested in getting better dyes for my gear. I was interested in upgrading that gear, you know what I mean? For me, kind of like the useless collectibles or the useless things that scatter the open world, the useless rewards, I suppose. There's not worse than doing a side quest that I already kind of don't want to do, that's already phoned in, that's like, follow this dude, keep out of sight or whatever. And then you get an absolutely useless currency at the end of it. I don't like it. It's what puts me off about Assassin's Creed, especially because I'm juggling all these different currencies, primarily probably because you want to monetize it and get your own premium currency in there. It's just like, I just feel nothing. I'm just seeing the numbers go up. And I just want something substantial. I just want to get something good out of it.
Yes, we've definitely got a separate thing, about like the amount of numerics that invade games, the amount of numbers popping off people and how you're only really, you know, ranking up skill trees to get +5 damage or, you know, -5% on something else. I will mention though, again, because of Tsushima, it's not that this podcast is about Tsushima, but I guess as one of the most recent sort of nexuses of where everything comes together, like, you know, it is an open world game and it does fall back on certain tropes. One thing, because you mentioned, Josh, about like, you know, the idea of like worthwhile progression, worthwhile things to unlock. As me and you talked about in a private DM, I didn't seek out any of the missions that were based around those rewards. I specifically did the story missions or the ones that would give me like a bow and arrow or different sort of things to unlock. And then I went to the main story missions alongside that. And at the end of it, I hadn't done a lot of the like the side character stuff or a lot of the ones where the only reward was another charm. And then you couldn't believe that because you were like, well, why didn't you do that stuff? And I was like, well, I was focusing on the stuff that would be the most meaningful. I don't know if that's the same for you, Ben Roy, but like that sort of progression, I liked that I could pick and choose stuff. But it did mean that I didn't go for the stuff that would just be charm-based. I went for the weapons and things like that.
I will say, again, not to just dive in and completely steal Ben Roy's point. Like, we're talking about Ghost of Tsushima a lot, but when it comes to, like, the charms, that was the one thing in that game that I did find useless. When I was looking for rewards, it was kind of, like, upgrades on new armor and stuff. But the charms, I was just kind of... That was, like, the overloaded, kind of, like, pointless... add-ons that I don't like to mess with in games because usually I pick the most effective ones and then the ones I get after that, they're not different enough to encourage experimentation. Once you find a nice play set, I feel like there's so many of them, they're all kind of so incremental in their upgrades. It's just like, well, why do I need another one of these? Why do I need to kind of invest in the system when the system already works?
See, I think the side quests were probably the best part of that. The individual sort of like friend quests, I would say. And especially, I don't know why, but I really enjoyed, I've forgotten everyone's name, the monk, was it? The warrior monk towards the end. The guy with the massive stick who shoves it on his back.
Oh, and it's just 4 p.m. on a Friday.
Ridiculous. Yeah. As he's just walking around with the stick on his back.
He's great.
I know he's great, but it just looked funny. But I thought that was probably the meat of the game rather than the sort of like generic-y sort of feeling of the main story and all the meaningless side stuff that I've cursed upon most open world games. I mean, the very end of Tsushima was a bit surprising. Like, oh, this is surprising. But then and it got me proper involved at some points. But I don't know. It feels like it wasn't, not even fully baked is bad way of saying it. I feel like the main stuff was hit and miss, side stuff was good, and then just, you know, following a fox was all right.
I will say that the thing is, I adore the main story. I think that it's the way that it ends gave me the same sort of feelings as the way Last of Us 2 ends, which is one of the biggest praises I can give it. Yeah, I absolutely love the way that thing comes together. But I will say as well that, the way that they design all the side stuff where, like, you know, you can just go talk to some random person and they'll give you a quest. And you know, this certain, place is under siege, go help me, these bandits are attacking, or go retrieve this heirloom or whatever. Stuff that sounds kind of generic on the surface, but I did find that because thematically I was this individual who was trying to save Tsushima, like, you know, trying to sort of, like, fight back against the Mongols and slowly like reclaim the island bit by bit, that that reinforced a level of purpose that I don't think hardly any other open world games, especially recent ones, have managed to get in. And that that is because of their relationship to the main story and because of how much they nail like Jin Sakai and the family honor and trying to do the right thing. And I think all that stuff goes hand in hand. But it all does fall down because the rewards aren't very good.
Open world games feel like a cheap excuse to try and scratch people's stealth itch as well. It's like all the stealth stuff is just now an open world. And especially to hard consumer, because it's the most recent thing I played, where you would blow things up on one side of a camp and on the other side, people would have no idea what was going on. And you would do a standoff and stab all these people in a dramatic fashion, and then you creep around and everyone's just chilling the way they were. And there's some points in that was really jarring for me as well. And in other open world games as well, it's like, as we've, I think we've mentioned before, like the tall grass syndrome of just like, let's get in the grass, stab some people and go back for tea.
Ben Roy, I will say, right, on the idea that people can't hear things over one end of the camp, right? I've only got an anecdote for you, right? One time when I was in an old flat, I was sleeping through the night and apparently I woke up to my flatmate saying, Josh, did you not hear what was going on last night? And some absolute nutter was pounding on our front door to the point where he left blood marks down it. He was hitting it that hard. And I just slept through it. So these dudes in Tsushima on the other end of a camp, like just sleeping through explosions, I buy it, man. Like that's real.
I give up this. It's Tsushima's game of the year. Let's go.
Yeah, the most relatable Geordie-based game so far. I think that a lot of open world stuff, it does kind of feel like a mishmash or just like a hodgepodge of various sort of bankable game frameworks that they think will just sort of work if you just put them next to each other. Like the better, like you said, the most basic approach to stealth is here's some tall grass. You know, you're either completely seen or you're not. It's not like there's a light detection meter like there is in Splinter Cell or something like that. And those things can kind of feel a bit stale. In Tsushima's case, I think that there's enough like heart, soul, passion, confidence throughout that of the project overall that it works. But there are too many games that just throw in open world elements. For me, Halo Infinite, as soon as they pulled out and revealed that map, I went, ugh, like I don't want that. I don't want an open world sparse Halo. Like for me, it's only going to take away from the reason I play Halo, which is constant engagement. The more you take those things away, like Arkham City, I would totally say that game would have been better the more linear it is, which I think Josh doesn't agree with, but I could be wrong.
Arkham City for me is like, to me, that's like the perfect open world, man.
There's not much to do in it, though.
It's because there's not much to do in it, but the way it's constructed, it's not like huge like Arkham Knight was. And for me, even though you might, like, I think it's a fair argument that it should have retained the kind of semi-linearity of Arkham Asylum and gone kind of down that Metroidvania route of having like a bunch of like these areas in a overall world and like you being encouraged to backtrack. But for me, Arkham City, even though some of the side quests do repeat to a ridiculous level, like I always felt that every single area in every single alley in every single building in there kind of like had a story or a purpose or, you know, like something about it, something to reveal about the world or the characters and stuff, compared to, especially at the time when everyone was just trying to go big, everyone was trying to scale up. You had like your Just Causes trying to be as huge as possible, which resulted in so many copied and pasted assets and all of these nondescript environments and an open world that didn't feel authored, even though I do concede that Arkham City might have been better not going open world. I still feel like its version of the Arkham City is incredibly authored and in kind of incredibly full of personality in a way that at the time so many open world games just weren't, and so many open world games now just kind of lack that distinct character.
I guess it's just not unique anymore. Just like, say, if The Last of Us Part 2 was all that open world section at the beginning, I would have probably been a lot more sour on it. Like, I feel like I like an authored experience a lot more. And sometimes in open worlds, when you can just almost feel like you can see the area that these developers crafted and lovingly put together, and they plopped it in part of a map. I'm not saying that directly to a Tsushima about it, but like sometimes I feel like, even like with like going back to like Days Gone, like I get a bit of the, I think the exhaustion started to hit me a lot more around there as well. Just like, I think it's just wandering a world to get to the good bits almost.
Yeah. Which is that's the thing with Arkham City, is just if you took the, like every time I was outside of one of those main areas in City, I just longed to be back in there, but to be back into something else that was more authored. And the open world in City's case just was lots of gliding. Like, you know, you drop in, you detect some bandits, you take them out, or some thugs, you go to the next place, and I was like, oh, this is where the game is. The game is around the corner in the next main bit, and I'm just going to have to do this sort of what I felt was kind of like empty busy work in between. And we'll add some stuff on here though, because we did mention we touched on Avengers earlier on, but that game has like an invisible loot system, which, you know, there's, you can go down the theory route, which I have, in terms of I think Square Enix asked them to put that in and it wasn't part of the initial mission statement. But where are you guys on loot systems in general? Because I remember, like, when Diablo 3, you know, made it to consoles and it was just sort of this resurgence of this is how you do a loot system, but so many games, like, take the Fortnite route of and it's not like Fortnite originated this, but the four color route of just sort of green, yellow and purple, and occasionally it's blue. And just sort of going down that thing. Are you guys as sick of loot systems as I am?
I'm sick of disposable loot in games. I don't mind the idea. In fact, I really like the idea of opening a chest and having a cool new piece of armor or a cool new kind of weapon in there. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, and again, I keep going back to Assassin's Creed because this has been, even though I enjoyed Odyssey, it's the biggest offender for a lot of these different tropes. Like in that game, I could never get attached to a piece of armor or a piece of loot because I was constantly swapping them out and I wasn't engaging with them other than on terms of pure numbers of which one gave me the most damage protection, which one gave me, you know, an extra chance for a critical strike. And when I'm just cycling through things so quickly, it kind of becomes pointless. It's like, well, what makes these distinct? Why am I actually doing it? Is it purely because one gun has bigger numbers than the other? And I think in the case of the Avengers, because it's like invisible as well, and you don't even have that cosmetic element to it. You're literally just sort of going into the menu and having the system auto kind of choose the best loot for you. It's literally just pressing a button, the numbers go up. That's the end of my engagement with it.
I never used to hit those buttons. Because, like, yeah.
I know, man, because like, why would I be encouraged to explore or engage with the system if the easiest option is to ignore it, hit a button, and then the game does it for me anyway?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like The Division 2, and sort of like they are the sort of like, you get a gun for 10 minutes and you throw it away. I don't want to just have a gun for like, just saying, like a few minutes and then get another gun with 2% better wind resistance. I'm just going to pick a 2% better in the rain. I just don't care. And it feels like that's when I said it, the games as jobs. I'm just like constantly looking at them as going through that. I'm going through a drawer, or there's some rice. Let's put that on this gun here. And it's just for me, it's not fun at the end of the day. And like I said, like another comparison, like Fortnite, you get the green one, then you get the blue one, then you get the purple one, and you get the gold one. But there's no, the only difference is the little shimmer as you pick it up. But after you've got it, it's just the same gun. Whereas like, say like, segue into like a PUBG, I think that's why I still like that so much, is you're getting guns that you kind of, you know, that are more damage, that do more damage, and you put things on them rather than just get the exact same thing, and it's the exact same thing over and over and over again. And with the Division, like I just gave up the Division 2, the game doesn't start until you finish it anyway. There's a whole new sort of like section it goes, but like I'm so exhausted with this loot and just pointless numbers and fixing, like between killing five dudes, fixing something and killing some more people, like seven times during a mission, I felt like sometimes. Just
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
I don't know if that was because, Josh, you raised a finger to your lips during that point as if you were going to dive in.
I did. I was just going to agree with what Ben Roy was saying because I'm not a huge PUBG fan, but I've been playing a lot of Warzone over the past few months. And they have a similar system where they've got so many different guns and so many different blueprints, and you're doing the same thing of popping open chests and you're looking for the numbers, you're looking for green, you're looking for blue, you're looking for orange. But I think they do it in a really interesting way where each gun is a blueprint. So it comes pre-packaged with a certain amount of kind of attachments. So you might have one that's really good for aim down sights, one with like silencers and stuff like that. And it sounds quite basic, but because they're limited every season and they're constantly cycled through, you only have a handful at a certain time. So across a single season, you're encouraged to get to know them, you're encouraged to kind of experiment with them, and as a result, you're not just looking at the damage output, you're not just looking at one assault rifle and looking at another one, and because this one is gold or whatever and because it's got higher numbers, like that's not just going to get you through, because you need to understand how it handles. You need to understand what sights are you to understand about like the aim down sights. And I know that doesn't work the same as it does in a single player or a linear game where you're constantly, you know, upgrading a character, and this changes every single match. But I just think I miss, and this is going to sound weird, dudes, I miss getting intimate, right, with like my character, in my weapons, in my armor. I miss kind of like that feeling of, this is part of me as a player. This is part of me as a character, and it's been with me on my journey. Well, I just want to point out, right, in Fallout 3, at the very beginning, you get a BB gun, right? And every single time I play Fallout 3, I never chuck that thing away because it's part of my character, right? It's part of my character journey, and I don't want to just dispose it. So even though it takes up space, I'll put it in like a drawer somewhere and just know that it's there, which is might be mad, but I think there's something in there.
Do you know what you'd love, mate? If you like that, you'd like the original Final Fantasy VII, because all the starter weapons in that game, you keep all the way through.
Why, when you've got the remake? But I was to just think, imagine if EA's Return of the King came out now, Aragorn would just be getting the same sword, but now it's blue, now it's gold, and Gandalf would just have a different color staff, and
Frodo, system.
And Frodo would have a different color of crying in the corner sort of thing. And
not even one ring.
Yeah, it just wouldn't even be fun. It'd be 17 different rings. You'd buy another one, but it's just... I think, like Josh, I'm old now and I long for a more simpler time.
Well, but like, there is a lot of it is strange because like there is eventually a satisfaction to sort of balancing the books and getting all those things in order and stacking certain, you know, crafting components and whatever it is, cashing those things in and ranking up weapons and ranking up your character. But the thing that Josh said, like, you know, it is loot systems are fundamentally discordant. Like, you're not going to stick with a build because it's going to change in 20 minutes. And that's what eventually put me off Diablo 3, because I want to build a character in an RPG, like I do in Skyrim, and I want to take those things through. I'm not taking my BB gun for 50 hours across the wastelands, but I do want to like have a meaningful evolution, you know, gear wise for RPG characters, and stuff like loot systems just don't engender that whatsoever. So yeah, I think that is like a kind of a problem to try and meet in the middle going forward. And we did mention, Josh, you wrote down men with shields as one of your things that you're sick of.
Oh yeah, I suppose we've been focusing quite a lot on like open world and character upgrades and stuff, but when it comes to sort of combat, and again, I got this when I was playing the Avengers, there are certain enemy types that I am just kind of sick of, and I'm sure Ben Roy will be able to back me up, perhaps not on this example, but I'm sick, right, of playing a character action game and there's a dude with a shield and I need to either jump over him or press him or hold a button to break the shield. I'm like, I've done this, I keep doing it, I've had me fill, like you and Tall Grass Scott, I've had my fill of this. Every time it shows up, I sigh a little bit inside. It's not going to break a game. I'm not going to mark a game down for it. But I'm like, have we not got any other enemy types at this point?
Like, you've always got the heavy. I'll tell you what, I'll add to this pile because I'm going through Alan Wake at the minute. The amount of dudes in that game towards the end that you just hold the torchlight on for ages as their health, as their shield slowly goes down. And you're just standing there holding the left trigger, like hitting Y to put enough batteries in to eventually get rid of their shield so you can actually shoot them with something. Yeah, I think that like sort of invulnerable or, you know, any sort of enemy that is like a heavy style one where there's nothing to do other than just wail away at it, that can be tiring, especially if you do apply it to open world stuff or loop based things. Ben Roy, you hate sticks.
I was just gonna defend Sam Lake quickly and go, like, normally with those guys just use the flashbangs or something like that, but
you got any, mate?
I mean, I guess so, yeah. Probably need to run around in the grass and loot some more. I don't know, but that's probably it these days. But I'm going to talk about the shields quickly. I'm going to say what I probably never mentioned to you two. The shield people in Final Fantasy VII Remake, just walking around behind the mantle so you can poke him. Just so annoying and boring and crap. Just crap.
Agreed.
Yeah.
The mini boss one at the start.
One of them. And I think if they carry on a few more of them. But I messaged a friend of them. Am I just meant to just try and run around this person and poke him in the back?
You can use grenades.
Oh, it was just so agonizing. Like when you're like, you're trying to work out, am I meant to break his stamina or something like other games you expect, but no,
you can counter them as well.
Just get behind him and poke him.
Just counter him.
But segueing back to Tsushima, people with sticks. The problem with Tsushima is I don't think the stance combat system is good at all because it's just
a separate discussion.
Hold a trigger, then switch stance right to the picture of the shield or the picture of the stick. Ice cream van's going past, you can probably hear it.
It's coming again.
And the triangle does this. If you switch, now triangle hurts stick man. Now triangle hurts shield man. Now triangle hurts big man with little swords. And now triangle hurts other man. I'm just like, one, that's a problem with that game. But two, stick men. When did we decide stick men have the unbreakable little red shimmer that started in... Did it start in Sekiro or was it in another game before that?
Unbreakable attacks have been around for a while. I mean, like, if you go for this generation, Rise...
I think it's a plague that started, a systemic problem started with Sekiro, where it's just like the little red flash. Oh, got to dodge the stick. Oh, now go in there. Oh, then he's now. Oh, you've got to switch to the stick power, or is he going to block you 17 times?
Is that not better though than having like a bullet sponge enemy that you're just going to wait?
It is
with
a
the
sponge,
same
technically. It is always you're slowing down the action to switch back to a thing, and you're constantly doing it. And there's like four or five different enemy types around you, and you're doing it for each one. It just because. Kind of stop being fun. So when you get the power to just hulk up and just go, I can't swear, but you know, and then just stab people instantly with that ghost ability, that was just a nice way to clean some people out. But my problem is stick people and people that require only one way to break them down, otherwise you just kind of
I hope there's, like, because obviously people will let us know what they think down in the comments, because for the most part, when it comes to Tsushima, I've seen resounding positivity. I kind of, in a way, hope there's a little wing of people who have just been like, finally, this is what's needed to be said for the last few months that we've been playing with this game. Because for me, that stuff is what gives it the variety, what gives it combat variety and gets away from all the bullet sponge stuff or the blade sponge stuff.
Yeah.
That is the stuff that I got so sick of in Assassin's Creed or like so many other open world games where you're just wailing on dudes that have a bigger HP pool and you have the same amount of you're doing the same attacks and the animations over and over again, but the numerics change. I think that whole numeric side of it is
one other thing is that when you're hitting them in a combo and then the very last hit, they always manage to just nope and hit you off, or they get your Pokemon. It's like, oh, I don't know. Tsushima's like a great 7 or 8 out of 10 though. Tsushima's great, but I'm just ragging on it because there are things that annoy me about it so much.
At some point, we'll do like the most annoying 8 out of 10 games, like games that are so close that still like annoyed you or something. Yeah. Josh, what's your thoughts on all this stance switching shenanigans?
I'm with you both. I'm always in the middle. I'm always in the middle of you both. I take the best points of each, I think. Anyway, on the one hand, yes, I much prefer this system over the idea of bullet sponges, because bullet sponges in general, they're not for me, man. Like, I don't like that idea of something is only difficult because it has more HP and it's just a grind. Same. And it's not fun. And it, not feeling like you're doing anything is like the worst offender in any game. The feeling that you're making no progression, whether it's fighting an enemy or in a loot system or whatever. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I also agree with Benroy that when you get an enemy where you only have one way to defeat them, especially in a game where it promotes a bunch of different like tactics and you have options, like that to me is frustrating. It's why I don't like that, say, in one game I might have to hold Y to break a shield, and that's the only way you can break a shield, and you can't go around them or whatever because they automatically turn. That I always think is kind of like a bad design decision. Like, I always like when you have options in combat, which in the case of Tsushima, I think you do. Yes. For me, I wouldn't kind of lump that criticism in with Tsushima because I do like the stance switching. I do think it makes it a bit more engaging. And even then, you don't just have to kill those enemies with that stance. You still have a chance otherwise, just your stagger doesn't do much damage.
There's always a crossover pool of every stance will harm every enemy if you really prefer using a different one. It's just that certain stances are better against certain other ones, like the spear enemy, shield enemies, whatever. Like, I thought that they balanced that stuff pretty well, although you can get caught in that mentality of like, oh my God, I'm holding L1, I'm switching. I did one attack, right, let me switch again. Let me do the other weak attack against something else. And I guess you could kind of get in that mentality of just being in that weird slow motion toggle over and over again, not knowing which stance you should stick to.
I do have a solution, and it is what I will praise this game for, is the bow and arrow. Like, pretty much you can one shot everyone throughout the entire game, and I really appreciate that. Well,
only when it's like ranked up.
Because that was the first thing I ranked up, so like, right, for me it was always headshotting people instantly, or even when you get the heavy bow and it does the arm on people. But yeah, it was, I think it's a bit of that. And then when they throw so many different enemy types at you, and then you've always got, there at one point you get 17 or big, like, you know, the big general people in camps, and just it just felt like I'm switching around too much and trying to slow mo, because there's one trigger, like R2 and L2 both do different trigger things, and there's trigger menus within that, so it's trying to like balance a lot of that. And I did find myself accidentally switching for some reason to like the noise distracting jingly thing for some reason, rather than like the bomb
wind chime.
So I'm throwing a wind chime, like, oh, it's not a bomb, damn it. As
I must say, Ben, like 50 hours or whatever playing that game, and I still could never get those menus right. I was still always messing up or choosing the wrong thing or accidentally doing a wind chime. I don't know why, but like, I love that game, but those menus were unintuitive, I thought.
I think, yeah, it is weird, like having sort of like multiple hold this and then use the face buttons to jump between stuff. But like, some of them are with the D-pad, some of them with the face buttons. I think they give you such a massive amount of combat options. But then, you know, trying to do them on the fly when you're trying to fight like 2 or 3 guys at once and toggling between explosives and different arrow types and throwables and everything, that can be kind of ridiculous. And one of the last things to sort of nail down for the, again, we mentioned a lot of open world stuff, but I think that that's somewhat indicative of how homogenous a lot of game designers become this generation, that nearly everything has a loot system, an open world component. Like, even Naughty Dog have gone down that route with Uncharted and Last of Us and stuff like that. One of the things that we wrote down before we started was the Ubisoft liberation game design structure, which was Josh's words. So I guess, do you mean in terms of unfogging the map, like one tower at a time?
Unfogging the map one tower at a time, but even more specifically, a huge mistake that I think Ghost Recon and Far Cry 5 made was you get like a huge map where you can freely explore it, which on the one hand is great because you can literally make your own story. You can go anywhere you want. You can make this journey yours. But at the same time, the whole game is you need to defog an area of a map. You need to take out some lieutenants and then eventually take out the leader of one area. And then you move on and you do the same thing again. And then you move on, you do the same thing again. You move on and do the same thing again. And then eventually you get to the main boss in the middle and then you beat them. And because of that, because there is so much freedom, it just, for me, it lacked kind of any sense of narrative pacing or urgency in the story, especially when it comes to Far Cry 5. And that was my biggest complaint with that game, was that because you could go to any of these areas feasibly at any single time and take out any lieutenant in any order, the game had to account for that, but it rarely did it in the story in a substantial or meaningful way. And it just made all of the missions and your place in this world kind of feel like meaningless in a way, and like you weren't having any real effect because you were doing the same thing and you're doing the same thing and you're doing the same thing, and then the game was over, at least the story was over. And it's like, there must be a way to marry freedom, if not total freedom, with some sense of authored story that maintains a sense of pace and a sense of kind of like stakes or something.
Ghost,
you know what I
mean? Tsushima does that really well.
That's what I mean. We've had a lot of examples that do that well. I think Ghost of Tsushima does it well. I think, you know, like The Witcher 3 does it really well. Spider-Man, Marvel's Spider-Man does it quite well. But still, we get a lot of other games that are going in the exact opposite direction, like those Ubisoft games. And it's like, why? Why are we doing this? Why are we going further in that direction? When, if anything, that should be something that, for me, was finished at the end of the last generation. Well, almost, we shouldn't have gone more down that route.
That was like the thing that we found out as soon as all the allegations and everything came out about Ubisoft's top brass, is that one dude, that Haskoy, or the hell he was called, was the one guy like having all these creative meetings saying, no, just keep doing this one thing over and over again.
Copy and paste. So,
Literally like copied and paste. And literally like telling entire creative teams and entire IPs that this is the way to make this one game. I think that'll go away.
At least with Ghost Recon Cocaine Mountain, it felt a bit more crackdowny, where as soon as you got a helicopter and you had like two or three of our friends, you could just rock in there and destroy a base and go straight to the lieutenant guy, destroy him and just get away and just go do something else.
See, that was cool, Ben Roy. And I had a lot of fun with both of those games. You know what I mean? Like Ghost Recon, especially, where you could just get a friend in a helicopter, like you said, go do the mission in the stupidest way possible and get that awesome mission complete thing. But that's only fun for like 5-10 hours. You know what I mean? If that's the whole game, by the time you're 20 hours in, like, I didn't finish Ghost Recon Wildlands because of that, because it was just more of the same. And I was like, I've had my fill of this meal, and there's nothing in the story that's keeping me going. There's nothing in the structure of the missions, because all the missions are on like the same wavelength more or less. And it's like, well, like, what's keeping me here after I've had my fill? What's compelling me to actually finish the game? And this is from someone who almost feels obsessively compulsed to finish every single game. Like, I get stressed out if I don't sometimes. I feel like it's something that I need to compartmentalize and finish. But for Ghost Recon, and to be honest, maybe even Far Cry, if I wasn't reviewing it, I might have been able to put it down and go, I think I'm done with this.
I've started Far Cry 5 3 times now, and I'm going to finish it this time.
There's something about the Ubisoft approach that doesn't, there was something about old school GTA when it was Rockstar, when everything was way more sort of physics-based or experimental, and like, oh, you know, if this target's going to escape, you can get there ahead of them before you trigger the mission, put a bomb in the car and blow them up and figure stuff out that way, that I thought Breath of the Wild tapped back into, obviously in a different setting altogether, but at least you could experiment your way through missions. Like, oh, you know, there's this encampment that needs taken out, but oh, if you climb the mountain next to it, you can knock a boulder off the top, which will take everybody out. And it's like, oh, I thought of that, I made that work. And that there's some of the things that make the open world genre so great. And but the more, even Rockstar, the more that they've, you know, got bigger, and the more they've tried to access a mainstream audience, and the more they've tried to quote unquote guarantee that every player sees the same thing, the more they've lost all those fundamentals. And hardly any games have that anymore in terms of just an open world setting being experimental. It's always more delivered, like they try and sort of guide you on a certain path. And in Ubisoft's case, like, yeah, there's nothing really freeform or experimental. You're still going point to point, doing the exact thing, finishing missions in the exact same way.
Far Cry 6 is probably gonna be the exact same, but I want it because I want to live on fictional Cuban island and fight Gus.
I do want to hang out with Mr. Gus. I forget what that dude's Gustavo, I forgot his real name is. I've completely blanked on that man's real name.
Giancarlo. I forgot his last name, but I know his first name is Giancarlo.
Mr. Legend Man, he's a good chap. Yes. But anyway, yeah, let us know what you think down in the comments below. Which sort of general gaming tropes are you a bit sick of, and what kind of stuff do you want to see changing going forward into the next generation? For now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
And Ben Roy Turner.
Watch out for those big sticks.
We'll catch you next time. Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.